Thoughts on it.
Hey everyone, just taking a quick 15 seconds to let you know that my new book, The Fitness Mindset, Eat for Energy, Train for Tension, Manage Your Mindset, and Reap the Results, which hit the bestseller list within 24 hours of its release, is now available to buy on Amazon. So if you're looking for everything you need to get into incredible shape and the mindset to keep it forever, be sure to check it out. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset. With your host, Brian Keane.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is going to be a bit more of a mindset and lifestyle episode. And it's one that I've wanted to do for a while. I've been doing a lot of running recently, so I'm training right now for the Marathon de Sabla, which is a 256-kilometer self-sufficient race through the Sahara Desert that I'm doing next year. I'll be running that for a couple of my charities. But what happens when I do runs is I tend to get into a very heavy flow state, which is, there's a great book by Michal Csikszentmihalyi about the flow state. It's effectively when you lose track of time. So anyone that's ever played a sport or played an instrument, or even when you're in a conversation with somebody and you look at your watch and go, oh my God, how did 2 hours pass? That's when you're in a state of flow. Another name for that is transient hypofrontality. It's when you switch off the front part of your brain, your prefrontal cortex, and allows you to basically just disconnect. A lot of people that meditate, people that go to the gym, where you feel that disconnect from the world, where you're focusing on the muscle you're training, it's a version of transient hypofrontality or a flow state. So one of these things that came up on one of my runs, particularly one of my longer 20-25k runs, was different questions that I regularly ask myself. And I thought I'm going to put this one on the podcast because it helps and serves me now, even to this day. And I feel had I listened or heard about these questions, I would have been asking them a lot earlier in life at age 21, 22, 24, 25. I'm 30 at the end of this year. These are questions that I would have been asking myself. So hopefully you get a lot of value, and one or maybe all five will land with you or resonate with you, and it will help break through a couple of your own barriers or limitations. I know I had plenty and I still have them, but nothing compared to what I had when I was 24, 25, where I had all these self-created limitations on business, on life, on my physique, on what I should be doing with my life in general. And these are the types of questions that I still ask myself regularly, and that I wanted to bring up and do a podcast on in the hopes that they help and serve you. So the first question is one that I regularly mention on the podcast on my different platforms. So if you're following my Facebook, my Instagram, my Snapchat, I put up different content on all those platforms. One of the things that I regularly will put up is, what would you do for free? Or what would I do for free, if I was going to phrase it in a first person question? What probably the biggest thing that has changed for me over the last couple of years, and I'm very, very fortunate, over the last 2 years, 2.5 years, I've released a best-selling book, the number one podcast, a business that makes more money than I ever would have dreamed of, particularly when I was working full-time as a primary school teacher and was struggling to get money to pay my rent every month. And the truth is, when you ask yourself, what would you do for free? A lot of answers start to pop up, and then I would advise finding a way to reverse engineer your life so that you end up doing that. And it's funny because a weird thing happens when you do the thing you would do for free. You start to get a lot of money as a result. So effectively, money is just the universe's way of showing how much value you're providing. And when you do the things you love for free, you love the journey, you love the process, and then you just end up arriving at the destination. Buddha says that how can you be happy at a destination if you're not happy on the journey? And I think one of the reasons that I've been very fortunate over the last 2 years is down to the process, the things that I do, the podcasts I make, the videos I make, the Q&As that I do, the books that I write. I would do it all for free. If I won the lotto tomorrow and won the Euro Millions and had, you know, $50 billion or 50 billion euro in my bank account, I would still be doing what I'm doing now. I'd be recording this podcast. I'd be making Snapchat Q&As. I'd be writing books. And one of the things that came up for me massively over the last probably 6, 7, 8 months is when I would consistently wake up every morning, and if I had 1 billion euro in the bank, would I still do what I'm doing for free? And when the answer was yes, I knew that I was quote unquote successful. And I've spoken before that find what success means for you. That has a completely different meaning to different people. And it's very, very important that you know what success looks like for you. For me, my old version of success was to look successful so that people thought that I was good, that I had nice cars and nice clothes. And my success barrier and barometer was put into so high, and it was put into external things that could be taken away from me in a blink of an eye. My success now is waking up every morning and doing what I would do for free. My success now is being able to take 2 hours off during the day so I can bring my daughter Holly, who's now two, bring her to a kid's place or bring her to a playground and spend my time with her because she's the top of my value ladder. That's what success looks like for me. It's not a nice car. It's not a nice house. It's not all, and I'm very fortunate I have all of those things, because as a result, when you provide value and you get money comes back to you, you can get all of those external things. And I'm very in a very fortunate position with the investments I've made, the business that I have, the life that I have, and the car, the house, all these nice things. They come, but they come when you ask yourself, what would you do for free? And then you start going down and climbing the ladder towards the thing that you were meant to do. You know, one of my favorite quotes that I regularly internalize myself is, happiness comes when what you have to offer the world merges with what you have to offer the world. Or happiness comes when what you have to offer the world merges with what the world needs. And that normally comes from doing the thing that your calling is, whatever it is that you know you were put on this planet to do. And that's relative. For some people, that's to be an amazing mother or father. Some other people, it's to start your own business. Some people, it's to climb the corporate ladder. Some people, it's to be the best bodybuilder or bikini girl in the world. It doesn't matter. It's relative to you. But ask yourself, what is it that you would do for free? And then start reverse engineering your life around that. The truth is, when you make the decision and you trust in the law of attraction or cognitive neuroscience of your reticular activation system, your brain's internal GPS, when you know what the end goal is and you know what you would do for free, you start seeing different messages and seeing different things that you didn't see before. All the opportunities that were right in front of your eyes, you start to see them now. And for me, and the reason that I share this question is, about 5 years ago, when I made the transition out from working full-time as a primary school teacher into starting my own business, was I was asking, what would I do for free? And for me, it was working in a gym. I wanted to work with people one-to-one. Now, that's changed since I have my daughter Holly now, and what I would do for free is different. Making content, helping and serving more people, they're the things that I would do for free now. But once upon a time, it was like, just wanted to be in a gym. I just didn't want to go to school Monday to Friday and live for the weekend. I was on the path of becoming one of those people that died at 25 but wasn't buried until he was 80. And I made that change. And I spoke in my book, The Fitness Mindset, that you're better to be at the bottom of the ladder against the right wall than halfway up the ladder against the wrong wall. And that comes from making the decision and finding out what's the thing you love to do. If you love watching movies, if you love listening to music, if you love going to the gym, how can you turn your life into that? You know, if you had told me 5-10 years ago that I get to make videos and help people, I get to write and I get to work out in the gym and take videos of it, I would make a living and a very successful living for me, and in most schemes for most people, a very successful living doing that, I would have laughed. But it starts with that question, what would I do for free? And then try and build your life around that, however that looks like for you. Okay, the next one is, what does my perfect day look like? This is one that I had an interview, one of my first interviews on the show was a friend of mine, Kevin Russell, who's a natural bodybuilder. We live in the same city. He now lives in San Francisco in California. But the first time I said this to him, he was like, I'm going to apply that. He goes, I need to figure out what my perfect day looks like. And it's funny because having had that conversation with him, I remember that from that day on, every 2, 3, 4 days, I would catch myself and ask, am I living my perfect day, or how do I want that to look like? Because when you know what it is that you want, you're able to work towards it. You can't hit a target you can't see. And when you know that your perfect day looks like spending 2 hours in the gym, or spending 2 hours with your family, or reading for a few hours, or spending time with people you love, when you know what your perfect day looks like, you can work towards that because you know what the end goal is. It's funny because I spoke on a video probably 18 months ago, before I'd started the podcast, about that I had one of my perfect days, that I got to get up in the morning, I got to spend some time with my daughter. She was really young, 3-4 months at the time. I got to go to the gym twice. I was able to split up my workout. I was working with clients in between. I was making videos. And I remember thinking, this is my perfect day. This is what I wanted my life to look like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Now my perfect day looks like getting up in the morning and writing, then going to the gym to spend a few hours in the gym, doing a run that is in my training right now, or doing some form of cardio that makes me feel good, then making videos and Q&As and social medias and podcasts, and then spending time with my daughter and my mum, the people closest to me, and then having time during the day or in the evening to read or listen to an audiobook. That's what my perfect day looks like for me. Spending time with the people that I love, getting to do the job that I love, getting to train, and getting to spend time consuming information that I can help and serve more people with some of the things that I've learned. That's what my perfect day looks like. And now when I know that's what it looks like, I can start working to make it look like that every single day. Now, there's days when things will come up and you're not going to have that. But if you keep hitting for it and you aim to get it 100%, you'll get it at 80%. But you need to know what that looks like. Who are the people you want to be around? I regularly say you're the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. Are you happy with the 5 people you're spending the most time with? If not, you need to change up the people you're spending that time with. I know who the 2, 3, 4, 5 closest people in my life are, and I try and build my time around spending time with them. I've spoken in other podcasts, and I speak regularly on my Snapchat, that time is my greatest commodity, or is my greatest indicator of thing that is important to me, because money and all these other external things you can make more of, you never get your time back. And it's why it's such a valuable resource to me. It's why I don't take meetings as regularly as I do now. It's why I don't spend time with people I don't want to spend time with. It all comes down to valuing time and realizing that you're not getting it back. No matter what you do, how much money you have in the bank, or what you look like, you're not getting time back. And I'm aware that energy is also finite. If you're spending time with emotional vampires who are sucking the life out of you, you're not going to have any energy to do the things that you care about the most. So your perfect day needs to be with those people that you love spending time with. They're helping you become a better version of you. You're helping them become a better version of them. You have more energy when you have those conversations. You're spending your day doing the things that you love and around the people that you care about most. One of my most downloaded podcasts was How to Stop Caring What People Think About You. And I spoke that you're going to go through your whole life, people telling you and giving out to you and moaning and giving out about different circumstances in life and always playing the victim. If you're spending time with those people, you're never going to have your perfect day, because they're going to drain your energy and they're going to drain everything that you have that's good in your life. And I have those people. Some of us have them in our family, in our immediate family. That might be your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, your husband, your wife. You need to minimize the amount of time you spend with them and make sure that the other 80% of your day is around those positive people, so that you feel better about everything that you're doing. You get one fucking life, and you can choose how you live it. Maya Angelou said that we only live once, but if you do it right, once is enough. But you need to make sure that you're doing the things that are going to make you happy. I spoke in my book that sometimes we just overcomplicate life. Find the things that make you happy, do more of it. Find the things that make you less happy and do less of it. Same with people. The people that make you feel good about yourself and the people that you have great conversations with and you love being around, spend more time with them. The negative people that are constantly giving out about the weather and their job and their boss and everything that's going on in their life and are telling you you can't do things and are always being a negative state around you, you need to spend less time with them. That's your decision. All those decisions you make are on you. You need to take ownership of every decision you've ever made to this point and realize that when you decide that you don't want to spend time with those people anymore, you don't have to do it. And your perfect day is only going to come when you spend time with the people you love, spend time with the people you care about, and you do the things that put you into a flow state. You do the things that make you lose track of time. That's where happiness comes from. And as a result, it gives you all this free time, or free thinking time that I spoke about in my book, where you can start doing the things that you're passionate about and live the life that you were born to live. But the truth is, it comes with making the decision and then building your day around that. Okay, the next question is, what would this look like if it was easy? And I found this in the Tim Ferriss book, Tools of Titans, and it's one of the questions that he regularly asks himself. Tim Ferriss also wrote The 4-Hour Workweek, which is one of my favorite business books. And the truth is, it's something that I've had to regularly ask myself. I've been a victim in the past, and even in the present at times, and the only difference is I catch it now, of being a little bit overwhelmed. One of my biggest flaws as a personality type, and it comes down to being probably a little bit of a type A personality type, is I tend to get a little bit of Superman syndrome where I think I can do it all and then I get overwhelmed when I can't. And it's something that I've worked on a lot over the last 6 or 8 months. And I'm aware that most jobs and activities that I take on now, that Jim Collins talked in his book, Good to Great, that most brands and businesses will die from indigestion as opposed to starvation after a certain point. And I get a little bit of Superman syndrome where I think I can take on everything and then I get overwhelmed when I can't. So I have to ask myself the question regularly, what would this look like if it was easy? And when I signed up for the Marathon de Sabla, which is that 256-kilometer race through the Sahara Desert, one of the reasons, and I spoke about this in the Frankly Nuts interview that I put up on my podcast, that one of the reasons that I signed up to that was my initial thought was fear. My initial thought was, I don't know if I can do that. And I love the Will Smith interviews where he speaks that when he was at a young age, he started to attack the things that scared him and the things that he was afraid of. And as a result, I signed up to it that night because I was like, I can't be afraid of something. I think I can't do something. I have to push my own limitations to see where they are, push my own barriers to see where those limits are. And having done that, I asked myself, what would it look like if it was easy? Because at the end of the day, it's 256-kilometer run through the hottest place in the world, marathon followed by a marathon, followed by a marathon, followed by an ultra-marathon, followed by a marathon. And I'm very aware that to look at that as a goal, and this is relative for whatever your goal is, whether it's to drop 3 dress sizes, whether it's to build more muscle, whether it's to start your own career or a new job or climb the corporate ladder in another position, it starts and things can seem overwhelming at the beginning. And I love the goal setting technique of how do you eat an elephant? You eat an elephant bite by bite. How do you walk a marathon or run a marathon? You do it step by step. How do you build a body? You do it rep by rep. The truth is, asking yourself what would this look like if it was easy can put a lot of that anxiety to rest. And when I signed up to the Marathon de Sabla, and this was very, very similar when I was trying to scale my business up, particularly when I was getting into those higher figure ranges, that I didn't know if I had the mindset in order to manage the amount of finances that were coming in and build the system that needed to be built. And I asked myself the question, what would this look like if it was easy? In the case of the Marathon de Sabla, I was like, okay, I break it down week by week. I started with 2 kilometer runs at the end of my workout, and then I went up to 3 kilometer runs, then I went up to 4 kilometer runs, and now I'm building up to 15 kilometer runs at the end of my workout. I have a long run on a Saturday that started at 15 kilometers, went up to 20 kilometers, and goes up 5 kilometers every week until I get to 50. What does it look like if it's easy? Because it's not easy doing the runs and getting it done, but by all, it is a lot easier to break it down and chunk it down and get your reps in and get your steps in, as opposed to looking at 256 kilometer and wondering how you're even going to attack that giant. My business was the exact same. When I was trying to step up to the next echelon, and I remember I had a lot of help from Tony Robbins at his Business Mastery, he was very, very helpful to me in terms of scaling up my mindset and allowing me to build systems that would help serve more people. When there was so many people coming through my programs at one stage, I wasn't able to handle all the emails that were coming in. I wasn't able to handle all the people that were coming through. So I brought on people to help. It's why Emma heads my coaching and my top 50 program. And I built in systems. I built in separate emails. I built in program videos within the program that alleviate a lot of that stress and overwhelm, because it's the same things that are coming in. So the questions that come in, you put in an FAQ system. You put in an email system where you're allowing your clients direct access to you or to your coaches. And you build a system where you have your coach that has all the knowledge within the program. What would it look like if it was easy? Again, normally that question comes on the back of overwhelm. When you feel that you don't know what you're going to do, ask yourself that question. I still do it every single day when I'm trying to break through some barrier or mental block that I have. I ask myself the question, what would it look like if it was easy? And then I try and open up my mind to different ideas that come as a result of asking that question. Okay, the next question then is, who are you doing it for? Or in the present tense or first person tense, who am I doing it for? The end of the day, sometimes you need something bigger than you in order to hit the goals that you want. Particularly if you're somebody listening to my podcast and you follow me, you probably have high expectations of what your life should be. And I tend to find that the people that resonate towards me tend to be of that mindset, or else have those blocks. because I had them for years. And they're just wondering, well, how can I connect the dots? What is it that I can do to connect those dots going forward? When the truth is, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. You have to trust the process that something will open up as a result. But a lot of it comes down from having a strong enough why. And I've spoken podcasts on in the past, and I spoke in my book, The Fitness Mindset, that my why is my little girl. Holly is my why for everything that I do. But you have to find out who you're doing it for. And the truth is, you may not be doing it for anybody other than yourself. You may not be running that marathon or that 10K or that couch to 5K for anybody other than yourself. You may be doing it to prove your dad wrong. You may be doing it to prove your mom wrong. You may be doing it because you want to be an idea, an example for your children. One of the reasons and one of the things that I look at when I'm struggling on my runs, particularly my long distance runs, for those of you who've seen me physically, I'm not largely built to run marathons. I'm quite stocky. I've got a farmer frame, a lot of muscle, and it's not generally the slow twitch fibers of a marathon runner that I have. And when I'm struggling on my runs, I always think that I look to my daughter and I think that I want to represent an idea of possibility and pushing past limitations and barriers that we've created ourselves. All our limitations, all our barriers, they're all self-created. And sometimes you have to dig deeper and find your why and why you're doing it. I remember when I was prepping for my first fitness model show before I became a professional fitness model and was competing in bodybuilding, I just wanted my mom to be proud of me. Like that was, again, one of the reasons I did it was when I was doing my hours of cardio and I was competing on stage and I didn't understand a lot of the elements that were in the bodybuilding and competing world in terms of, you know, different performance enhancers, different drugs, steroids, things like that. And I had the mindset that I'm just going to outwork everybody else. And that was basically what I did. I wanted my mom to be proud of me. I remember, and it's funny because you got to know who you're doing it for. I came in from my first fitness modeling show and I came fourth in a world competition, and I came in from that competition. I remember I was sitting at a table at home, and my dad had a newspaper. He pulled it down and he goes, "How much weight did you lift?" I was like, "Oh, that's not what I did, Dad." He was like, "What were you doing?" I said, "Oh, I was on stage." And he put his paper back up again. I don't do things for my dad. I do things for my mum. I do things for my daughter. You need to not be doing things for people who don't fucking matter or for the people who you don't need to impress, because otherwise you're going to go through your whole life trying to impress the people that may not even care what you're doing. And I love my dad and everything that he does. He's given me a work ethic and a resilience that I couldn't dream of. And I'm so grateful for that. And the way that I see the world is largely down to having different opinions of the way I was brought up, and I'm very, very grateful for having him in my life and to design a mental bulletproof mindset that he's given me. But you got to know who you're doing it for. I don't do it for him. I do it for my mom. I do it for myself, and I do it for my daughter. I want to represent an idea. I want my mom to be proud of me on my first show. I want my daughter to see that she can do anything when she's older, that limitations are all self-created. And you have to realize and figure out who you're doing it for. And you also have to realize the people that you're not doing it for. Because sometimes we make decisions and think that, well, I'm going to show that person, or I'm going to, you know, fuck them. They call me fat or skinny. I'm going to show them. And you can use that fire. Energy is never lost. It's transferred. It's a basic law of physics. And you can take that fire, but fire is something that can fucking burn you if you don't choose to use it correctly. But fire can also light up an entire house if you choose to use it correctly. So if you let that fire destroy you, it can kill you and kill any dreams that are within inside you and kill anything you want to do. But if you can use it, it's one of the most positive channels of energy that you could ever use. So by all means, keep the fire, but be aware that it can fucking burn you if you let it. So you've got to use those comments, use those jibes, use those people to move you forward. But never forget why you're doing it. Never forget who you're doing it for. And use those in the mornings you don't want to get out of bed. Use those in the mornings that you don't want to read that book. Use those on the days when you're struggling and feel you can't go on, because your why will keep you going. The why, the how means nothing until you have your why. Okay, and the last one then is, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? I ask myself this question very, very regularly. what would I do if I knew I couldn't fail? Because the truth is, all the limitations we create, everything in our mind, in our job, in our life, in our relationships, in our body, all those limitations are self-created. Every prison that you have is within your own mind. Every battle you're struggling with is within your own mind. You need to get control of that. There's an old African proverb that I love that says that if there's no enemy within, the enemy outside can do you no harm. And you have to understand that seeing failure and thinking that you're going to fail on whatever it is that you try is down to the limitation, the story that you've told yourself. So you need to understand and ask yourself the question, what would my life look like if I knew I couldn't fail? What would I do if I knew I couldn't fail? Because we let the fear of failure or the fear of success stop us becoming who we're supposed to be. We stop us letting us join the gym. We end up self-sabotaging ourselves in a relationship. We end up not making that jump into the career or the job we love because we're afraid. What would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? Every single time you make up a story, and all we are our stories. The stories you tell yourself, you become the person in the story that you tell yourself. And if you tell yourself that you're afraid, if you tell yourself it's not a good idea, but you know in your gut and you know in your heart that it's the true thing and it's the thing that you need to do, ask yourself, what would I do if I knew I couldn't fail? Because when you think of failure, and again, failure is just the way you see the world. When you reframe failure as some other way that didn't work, like Thomas Edison, who invented the light bulb, said that he didn't find 10,000 ways that didn't work, that he didn't fail 10,000 times trying to invent the light bulb. He just found 10,000 ways that didn't work. Failure was just one other way that didn't work. When you fail forward and you throw things against the wall and you see what sticks, and every relationship you get into that has failed, you learn from it and you move forward. Every workout you do where you fail, you learn from it and you move forward. Every job you do where you fail, you move forward. Life is about progressing forward and using failure as a way to see the world and how you can get better. But ask yourself the question, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? And sometimes that helps to understand that failure isn't a real thing. You've created failure. And normally, if you can reframe it into a way that just didn't work and it's moving you one step closer to the person you want to be or the job you want to do or the person or the lifestyle that you want to live, you end up reframing the entire thing. So the biggest advice I can offer is ask yourself, what would you do? What would your life look like if you knew you couldn't fail? Okay, so that's everything in today's episode. A little bit of a heavier hitting mindset lifestyle one. So hopefully you get a lot of value from this. I know I get good feedback from these episodes generally, but be sure to hit me up. Let me know if you like it, love it, hate it, dislike it. And be sure to let me know because I base all the podcasts off feedback from people. So hit me up on DM on Instagram, hit me up on Snapchat, BrianK019, and let me know what you thought. Again, if you like these lifestyle mindset ones, I'll do more. If you prefer the Q&As, I'll do more of those. Interviews, let me know, because everything I do on the podcast is all based off feedback on what you want to listen to. So a massive thank you for listening and downloading. For more information on me, you can head over to my website, www.briankeenfitness.com. Information on my top 50 program, GEA Youth Program, GEA Lean Body Program is all up on there. My best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, is available on Amazon, the Book Depository, and Dubry Bookstores in Ireland, and selected bookstores in Ireland and the UK. And my Snapchat's BrianK019. Massive thank you to Common Voxonic, who puts together all my podcast episodes. Catch you all soon.